the South. Can y'all really feel me? Feel us. East Coast feel me.
Feel us.
West Coast feel me.
Say what?
Dirty South.
Here we go.
Can y'all really feel me?
Baby girl.
East Coast feel me. West Coast feel me.
Can you feel us?
Brad Taylor in here trying to sabotage me. On a Sunday morning. I don't know why. All I did was come in here and help him. I helped him with the log. I helped him with his recordings. I helped him with the email. I even helped him give some of his Big Mac Daddy Stogie picks of the week. And he's going to sit here. He's going to treat me like that. Brad Taylor, get out of here. Scram. It's Angelo Carriero on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5 FM, streaming live all around the world at WLXG.com. Good job this morning, like always, Brad. I will see you next Sunday. You have a good one, sir. But, enough talking about Brad. We got to talk about this Kentucky-Missouri game. I got to tell you what, for a loss that, I mean, it was bad. We can all sit here and say that, and we understand that. But the fallout last night was really unexpected, or at least I thought it was. I didn't think that, I mean, look, it was a bad loss. It was, I don't know if embarrassing is the right word. I mean, I think that the team has more when I say class, I mean, it's not like the team didn't have they acted right at the game. I meant like Kentucky is a league above Missouri, in my opinion. But obviously, the football field had a different story. Not saying Missouri is a bad football program. It's just they are recovering. They have a new head coach, which proved to be pretty good. And you wouldn't expect the type of backlash to a game like this. Okay, so like let's go to Twitter, because that's where all of it was happening. Like the first hour after that game, even I was like, woof, like I was, how is this such a just controversial game? You could say, oh, it was a pretty bad game, you know, it is what it is. But then some tweets started coming out, and a couple of them caught my eye. So the first one that I saw, Mike Edwards of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, formerly University of Kentucky football safety, obviously. He said, no way we only have 46 passing yards. Okay. That's nothing bad with that. But not only did Quentin Bohanna and Akeem Hayes like it, like they are also in disbelief. Lonnie Johnson Jr., the second-round cornerback of the Houston Texans, obviously formerly of the University of Kentucky, put two laughing emojis. Laughing? Laughing, what's funny about 46 passing yards? What's funny about that? Did they not like Terry back in 2018? Or specifically, did Lonnie not? Because laughing emojis, like, to me, signifies the lack of support. But I saw that. And then Aya Wilson. Let's see. I think she is Terry's mother. I want to say she went on Twitter, said, "So I'm sorry, BBN. I feel like the kids got let down tonight. My heart is breaking for them. Adults making decisions that make kids look incompetent, and they still get cash. I'm hurt for them. Change QBs, change RBs, change DBs, socks, etc. Is that the real problem?" That was, I mean, that's pretty profound to say that. And it was interesting to see what Coach Stoops had to say after the presser. First off, I mean, the big news here in the press conference after the game was Coach Stoops was asked about the starting quarterback going into the Georgia game, which is, as the game ended yesterday, less than a week away. Noon kickoff. We're going to have the UK Game Day pregame show at 10:30 in the morning, and we'll take you all the way up to kickoff at noon. UK, home for Georgia. Last game before the bye week. It'll be myself and Coach Ortmeier on the UK Game Day pregame show next Saturday, 10:30 a.m. Coach Stoops said he was not sure about who is going to be the starting quarterback against Georgia. And I don't think it really matters. I know that's something that is, I guess, would be considered controversial. But I don't. I think that this should be it should be situational between the quarterbacks and their play. So even if there's not a starter for Georgia, which is just alarming that it'll be the sixth game of the season and you're not sure who your starting quarterback is. I feel like that's something we would have gotten figured out by now. Even if you have to ride with the ups and downs of which quarterback it is, that you would have decided which one you feel like is best for the team. Which leads me to where, I guess that leads me to the way I see it, which is Terry and Joey can both play. And there's nothing wrong with it. There's just because you play two quarterbacks does not mean that you have to, that other programs are going to, you know, look down at you and turn their nose like, oh, they don't have an established starter. Doesn't matter. Who cares what other people think? Who cares what people are going to write? If you look on Twitter, all the media members are going to write positive things about you anyway. So you don't have to worry about them. I will say that I was very blown away last night after Terry Wilson threw one good throw in his 9 attempts. He had 8 bad throws. He had one good one. Albeit, yeah, it was a touchdown pass. But at what point do we mock people that want to see Joey Gatewood come to the game or blame everybody but Terry Wilson, even though we have a very large sample size now, that Terry Wilson as a passer is not the answer to the woes of the passing game? But a lot of condescending remarks. And after that, what did Terry do passing? Nothing. Coach Stoops said that Joey Gatewood coming in and this is important. Coach Stoops said at the end of the game, when Joey Gatewood came into the game down 10, spread 4 wide receivers out to each side, which isn't primarily, especially with wide receivers. Now, sometimes they'll put put tight ends in and bring them into the line and whatnot. But going 4 wide outs, 2 to each side, is not very common when Terry's in the game. Down 10 points with, 3:57 left? Something along those lines. They brought Gatewood in, and the drive's going well for the first throw. It's going well after the second throw. And then Josh Ali fumbles, and it ends the game. Not saying that Kentucky would have won the game. It's kind of like against Auburn, where they got that score, and it was down 2 scores and 2 two-point conversions, like 2 touchdowns and 2 two-point conversions from tying the game. It's like, you can try. But this was a situation where Coach Stoops said that getting Joey Gatewood in at the end of that game was for reps. Do not let him fool you with those statements. Because Coach Stoops is like every other coach. The reason why he's at that level, other than the money, is there is a certain competitive fire that guy just has innately. That he wants to do one thing, and that's win. He wants to win. And I can't, if it wasn't a Sunday morning, if this was right after my UK postgame show, I probably would scream it at the top of my lungs that he wants to win, because that's true. So when he put Joey Gatewood in down 10 with the opportunity to drive the field, and then if you get the onside kickoff, you only need a field goal. You don't think Coach Stoops was sitting there thinking that he could still win that game? Because you on the couch may have thought the game was over. I may have thought the game was over. But that man that heads the Kentucky football program thought he could win. He thought he could win, and that's why he put Joey Gatewood in at the end of that game to pass the ball. because he knows that the future of this offense, passing-wise, is Joey Gatewood. But running-wise still, I think Terry can still be the man to man that side of it. We'll talk more about the game here coming around the corner. Give me a call, 381-1313. That's 381-1313. Here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5 FM, streaming live all around the world at WLXG.com. I'll tell you what, as a big of a bummer the UK-Missouri result was, the ending of that Tampa Bay Dodgers game made me fall in love with baseball again. Don't forget the NFL picks that I have at the end of the show. Right now, sitting at 6-0 on Locks of the Week. So I didn't have a great week picking. I think I went only 8-6 last week, but I did get my Lock of the Week. Six unique teams in 6 weeks, six wins. So if you're in a survivor pool, you're going to want to listen to the end of this show. Give me a call. You want to talk fantasy football, want to talk anything, but I'm going to hit a little more on the UK-Missouri game on the other side. So stay with me. It's Angelo Carriero on ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM. Hey, I know all about that. See me in your city, sitting pretty, no I'm shining down. Riding with a couple land bras, I'm trying to die. Welcome back in. Angelo Carriero here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5 FM, streaming live all around the world at WLXG.com. Give me a call at 381-1313. That's 381-1313 to get in on the conversation. I'm sitting here looking at the NFL schedule, and oh boy. When I tell you that the lock of the week this week, getting a little thin already. I know that sounds crazy, but it's not looking spectacular, and I'm going to really have to put my thinking cap on and try to figure out who's going to be a winner out of this week. I think I might have one. I haven't picked them yet. They're on the road, which is scary, but they need a bounce back game. If you know me, you probably know the answer to that, but I'll get to that last segment of the show at the end. You can listen in for the NFL picks and get your lock of the week for Survivor Pool, because I was able to go 6-0 with six unique teams, which we'll see how long that lasts. Because last week I was like, oh boy, I've had a really good start to the season. I was like 51-27 or something like that, and yeah, didn't go well last week. Did not go well last week. But we're still talking about Kentucky, Missouri here. Like I said, give me a call at 381-1313. That's 381-1313 to be a part of the conversation. So left talking off that with Coach Stoops saying that Joey Gatewood was in at the end of that game for reps, I don't believe him. I think he thought that he still had a chance to win the game. And he put the player in at the quarterback position that he thought gave him the best chance to win the game. Because guess what, everyone? That's what coaches do. That's what they do. They want to win football games. Now, if it's a blowout, yeah, then it's for reps. But it was a 10-point game with just under 4 minutes left. Now, are the odds in your favor? Not really. But is it still winnable? Absolutely. You're not down 30. With 3 minutes left, down 10. Got my first call of the day here. It's Angelo Carriero on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5 FM, streaming live all around the world at WLXG.com. Just click on Listen Live and give us a call at 381-1313, or give me a call at 381-1313. Caller, what's your name?
Sean.
Oh, I thought I was going to hear from you this morning, Sean. All right, tell me what's up.
I need to know what's going on. Where are we at this morning of Eddie Grand? Where's the program at?
Oh, man. All right, I got into the Eddie Grand conversation the other night. I've always said one thing about Eddie Grand. You can give him $10, send him to the grocery store. He's going to get you ingredients. He's going to make you a meal. You can give him $100. He's going to make you the same exact meal. Look what he did with Lynn Bowden. Look at what he did with Lynn Bowden last year. I thought that was a pretty impossible circumstance to be in, and he turned that into a very, very, very exciting season. And what was it? 8 wins. But you know, you give him what we have now, and it's I'm with you. It's not very good.
I think the quarterback controversy is they don't have one.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, they don't.
When do you give the kid from Catholic some reps? Band again?
Ooh, I love that, because you know I want to see Bo Allen. I'd love to see Bo Allen out there.
Oh yeah.
Honestly, is there a way during the bye week if you could put Terry's running ability into Joey Gatewood, or Joey Gatewood's arm, if you could sew it on to Terry Wilson? I think then you're talking about maybe a football player there.
You know what? Coach Stoops has a bourbon. I heard.
A what?
He's got a bourbon out.
Oh yeah. I heard about that.
And I'm just assuming it's kind of like his time here, about 8 years, two of them are good.
You did not. Come on, Sean. It's better than that. Not the bourbon, his time here. I have no idea about the bourbon. But, come on. Yeah.
Hey, I'm taking the Bengals in the upset today, and you take care of yourself, buddy.
Thank you, Sean. I appreciate you, like always.
See ya.
I love Sean, man. Sean's a good buddy of mine from works past. So, I don't know. Give me one second, guys. When it comes to what Sean was saying about not having a quarterback, we have two halves of a great quarterback. Terry's running ability, and everybody says, well, he's not great in design runs. Well, it just depends what you mean. Is a design run where you have everybody blocking and the quarterback has no fakes and he just goes? Or is a design run a speed option? Because an option play is technically a design run for a quarterback. And he does pretty well with those. And I think you all have realized by now, I really don't care what other people have to say about like the way that I think about things and my opinions, because I support them and I believe in them, and I'm always able to say when I'm wrong and why I was wrong. Unless I can't fathom it, and then it's just one of those things. But Joey Gatewood can pass. He can. People online were saying, oh, if Kentucky loses this game, those two drives that they let Joey play, how'd that work out? Because they said that right after the touchdown pass, and then it was crickets the rest of the night. People are human, and they get caught up in the moment. And like I said, I'm glad that they support Terry Wilson, the guy, because I do too. That's not the point. And I'm sitting here stressing, and a buddy of mine, we were talking about it last night, that he said I hit it on the head when I said that it is okay to call out Terry for not being a great passer, but being a playable quarterback. He said it's okay, like, because if you say anything wrong about Terry, you hate the program, you hate the kid, you hate Kentucky football. Anybody knows me knows that's the furthest thing from the truth. But he can't pass. But he can run. And I still think that's really valuable when you get into these heavy formations. Even, and what I mean by that is like two backs in the backfield. You got your tight end in line. And you're ready to run it down the opposing team's throat. If Kentucky's up a touchdown or two, or even more than that, put Terry in. And let Terry go to work with that option run offense. Because with that offensive line, I mean, look what the offensive line did once they started letting Chris run the ball. My papaw hit it on the head. He said he called me. We were watching the game. He called me. He said, why? And he was just throwing out, thoughts of the game. He was like, why are we using the quarterback to try to to win the game when the running game's the best part of the team. There's absolutely no disputing that running the ball is the best part of Kentucky's team. And I thought about it for a second, and I was like, you're right. And a lot of people, not just him, but a lot of people were pointing out, why are you forcing the pass? Because I know Missouri had gotten picked apart in the passing game, but that doesn't mean you have to. It doesn't mean you have to pass. It's not necessary if you can run the ball. So I've pitched that a lot. That's my thoughts and feelings about the quarterback position. I think Terry Wilson should play. I think him and Gatewood should essentially split the snaps. I think whenever, because, you know, and I get why coaches do it. You want to try to catch the other team off guard because those are the little advantages in football you can get. But if I'm a defense, I play Terry Wilson like he's an extra running back. You know, I wouldn't go as far to say, nah, actually I would. I'd go like the way teams played Lynn last year. Like, if you don't have a safety, maybe you put a safety over the top, and that's kind of the difference with what they did against Lynn, like defenses did against Lynn last year when he was playing quarterback, especially towards the end. But he's just not a passing threat. So if teams know that already, even when you pass, I mean, you're just putting, if you're passing with Terry, you're putting yourself at a detriment. So if you put Joey in there, at least he can kind of scoot. I don't like him near the runner that Terry is. But he can kind of scoot. So, if you've got to pass the ball, if you're tied and you want to pass, if you're down and you need to pass, yeah, the defense might know he's going to pass, but at least when you put him out there with the wide receivers, you think to yourself, yeah, I think he could get a, he could complete a 3rd and 12. I don't feel that way about Terry right now. And it's not against him. He's a good young man. He's a good young man to have in the program. I still think he should play. But I just don't want to see him pass another football here. Unless it's like a halfback pass or something, you know. Because, I mean, and people use that as a bad thing. But watching the Nebraska game yesterday, they put their quarterback, Luke McCaffrey, who's Christian McCaffrey's brother, Ed McCaffrey's son, put him at running back, even though he's on the team as a quarterback. They gave him a traditional handoff, and he went 47 yards. I thought, as great of a teammate as Jalen Hurts was, I thought he was a little too prideful to play running back at Alabama. But once Tua came in, I think you could have seen a lot of the same things. So what's the problem with having two dynamic athletes? Well, Terry's pretty dynamic. Joey, I think, is just athletic for a quarterback. But we'll see. I haven't seen enough of him to really put that stamp on it. We'll see what that's like. Maybe put Terry in the backfield and do something crazy with him and Joey. They're two good athletes. They can both, you know, in positionally, they can throw. So get funky with it, especially with Georgia coming up. You're going to have to throw the kitchen sink at Georgia. And going into the bye week, it's time to unload the bullets. Time to unload the clip. It's time. Do it against Georgia. Eddie, people are calling for you, which is weird because usually I'm at the front of that line, but not recently. I think, which is just surprising. Eddie, if you're listening, I got your back, man. I do. I think it's time to take the playbook as it is, turn it, flip it upside down, and shake it until every last play that you've ever made comes out of that. And you use every one of them. Use everything crazy. You throw Georgia off. Give them looks they've never seen on tape. Maybe you sneak out. Like, you just eke out a win against Georgia. Create a whole new playbook around a new system, splitting Joey and Terry, and just go in as a second season against Vanderbilt, going on the road, Alabama, Florida, ending the season at home with South Carolina. Because this is like, it's like any TV show. This is the mid-season finale. Go out with a bang. Come back after your break. Reinvent yourself on offense. And let's get back to work, as Coach Stoops likes to say. One final thought about the game before we move on. I thought it was a little ridiculous that Coach Stoops, and this is why I think he said it. Coach Stoops said that it's not all in the offense. He said the reason why they couldn't win that game was because of the defense not playing the way that he knows they could play. I kind of think he said that because he's a defensive coach, and he expects more out of the defense than the offense, in my opinion. I think he expects more out of the defense than the offense, and I think that's right to have that opinion because he is, you know, the defense is really good and the offense is, you know, up and down. But to have the audacity to say that, I think once you look at the stats, you're kind of like, all right, let's calm down. Because we all watched it and we all saw that the defense didn't play great, but when you look at the time of possession and Missouri was on the field for 43 minutes, let's psychologically give them 2 extra minutes. So it's 3 quarters of football, 3 full quarters of an offense being on the field, and the team only gives up 20 points? That's saying something. And what I believe Terry's mom said is, I believe that's his mom. Not 100% sure. But on Twitter, her last name is Wilson defending him, so I would say that they're at least kin of some sort. But, you know, she said that, you know, blaming it on the players while the coaches make money. And I've had people to disagree with me, but third down, 10 for 20. Fourth down, 4 for 5. That means you got that offense into 25 third and fourth down situations. And they converted 14 of them. To me, that's not a player problem. That was a scheme problem. But Coach Ortmeier called it. He said that this was that surprise shift in the schedule is going to make Missouri kind of a trap game. Not because they're looking ahead to Georgia, but because they have to go on the road when they thought they'd be at home, the preparation, all that. And I think Coach might have hit the nail on the head. Whew. That was a lot of fun. I gotta say there's a lot of energy coming out of this game I didn't expect. I know it was like a pretty bad loss, but I think there are points where you can be like, it's understandable. No, it's really not, apparently, to a lot of people. I think it's understandable. I'd like to think that you can look at it and, you know, you can't take anything good out of it, but every team has a game like this. But no, I'll tell you what, on the interweb, it was very contentious last night, and that was interesting to see. All right, I got a little fun that I'm going to have for myself at the end of the show, so we're going to go right into the NFL picks here right around the break. It's Angelo Carriero on ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM, and streaming live all around the world at WLXG.com. This is Angelo Carriero here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5 FM, streaming live all around the world at WLXG.com. I said I was going to get into my NFL picks, and I am, okay? But I almost dropped the ball on three pieces of notes. Oh, my goodness. One of them I'll save for the end so we can transition into it, but if you stayed up last night to watch that Tampa Bay Dodgers game and you've been disenfranchised from baseball over the last so many years, I've said it before and I'm going to say it for a long time until baseball truly catches my attention again. But when I grew up during a time where my heroes in baseball were Sammy Sosa, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Mark McGwire, you know, they're all synonymous with one thing. And when the league of Major League Baseball kind of took advantage of what they gave financially and then denounce them for, you know, what they represented to the game and what was happening with kids. I remember the reports were that, you know, young children, like teenagers were using steroids to try to improve themselves, and they were, you know, injuring themselves or even dying from it, and because they were using, you know, good ones or administering whatever. And a lot of parents were very so concerned, and there's so much high-end money in youth baseball that Major League Baseball had to condemn them. And more or less, like, I'm more upset at the writers more than anything. The Major League Baseball Writers Association that votes in the Hall of Fame should be ashamed of themselves, and I truly mean that. I mean, like, to my core, I mean that. The same way that I think the pro football writers that vote for the Hall of Fame should be ashamed they didn't have Terrell Owens get in first ballot. Guy's second all-time in touchdown receptions, you know, same thing, but that's a personal gripe. But not voting Barry Bonds in as the first unanimous Hall of Famer ever. Stupid. It was. All those guys should be in the Hall of Fame. And that's the end of that conversation for me. But you see how passionate, you can hear how passionate I am about that. And that's why I've just kind of fell out of love with baseball. I think it just, you know, it's who's the next star you're going to take away? But last night, if you stayed up to watch that game, oh my goodness, that was baseball. That was baseball. That was the baseball we all at least used to know and love. And it's not the baseball that everybody hates either. That analytic baseball. That home run or nothing baseball. This was a game that was decided on bloop hits and defense. The throwback to the time where baseball was played inside of the boundaries and not in the stands. And what made it so exciting is that it was back and forth, because I think the Rays were down 2-0, and then it was 4-2 Dodgers. And the Rays came back, made it 5-4, and then the Dodgers made it 7-5. I believe, if I'm doing this correctly in my head, kind of recalling. And then in the last inning, Kenley Jansen comes in, and boy, are Dodgers fans upset at him. Which I don't think it was as big of his fault as everybody makes it out to be. To be quite frank, watch the last three outs outside of the fervor. If you're a Dodgers fan, watch it outside of that fervor that you had. Or if you're just interested in seeing why they blamed Kenley. I didn't, you know, like, looking back on it. So Kenley lets two men on base, including a Rosarena, who, what a superstar before our eyes. I mean, that guy when he comes out to the plate, you know, baseball players, it's typically, you know, it's always the joke, the highest paid players in baseball get, you know, they do their job well 3 out of 10 times. You know, like if you're a 300 hitter. A Rosarena, when he goes up there, I'm like, the pitcher's in trouble. Like, you might as well just walk him, because whatever else you do, it's going to end up even worse. What a special, fun player. And if you haven't heard Jeff Passan's Rosarena, where he does it to Macarena, and how passionate he was in his column, Jeff Passan for ESPN is a rising. He's going to be a superstar in that next tier. Like, he's going to be the next Buster Olney. He's going to be the next Tim Kurchin. He's going to be the next Peter Gammons in that sport, covering that sport. He's really funny. You can hear that on the Dan Le Batard Show, 10 to 12, Monday through Friday, right here on ESPN Sports Radio, 1392.5 FM. But with two outs and two strikes, Brett Phillips, a kid that was just thrown in there as a pinch runner at one point in the game, a kid that believe, had never had a postseason hit in his career. He comes up to the plate. Just imagine just this young, you know, kid shouldn't be in the moment, shouldn't be there. He's like any of us. He just, you know, it's one of those things like, how did I get here? And bloop, hits it right over, I believe, oh, who's playing second base? It was Kiki Hernandez? Is that who it was? Right over second base. It drops, tying run scores. A Rosarena's rounding third to home, ready for this iconic moment of base runner to catcher, bang, bang. And it was even more iconic than that. Because a Rosarena falls, and there's an angle that Major League Baseball had where it's looking at the Rays dugout. And after the hit, you see every single Ray standing up, hands up, like circling base. As soon as a Rosarena falls, you can see 40 men stop cold. It's fascinating. They, all 40 of them, just drop their hands and their feet. They stop jumping and they just stare. Because they're just like, that's it. Even though the game was tied. Ball comes to the plate. And unfortunately for our guy from Louisville, I think he was the catcher last night, misses the ball. Ball goes behind the pitcher, or behind the home plate. Goes behind home plate after the catcher misses the ball as he tries to swipe tag a Rosarena, because he doesn't realize that a Rosarena just fell rounding third. Ball goes past him. He misses it. He goes to swipe. No ball in his hand. A Rosarena gets up, notices it. He slides and he pats home plate. The Rays go crazy. And for a moment, for one moment, baseball, that youthful love that I had for baseball, was back. It was amazing. Sky Clark, 5-star 2022, basketball prospect committed to Kentucky. I'll get more information on that as we go. He's very highly touted. Everybody talks about him. I am, just when it comes to recruiting, when it comes to football, I can try to put pieces together, but when it comes to the basketball, they're all so highly touted and everything. I just want to see on the court, let me get my first impression, and we'll go from there. But that is a huge deal. And with Brandon Boston's emergence and all that, I mean, it's been a while since Kentucky got the Amani Bateses of the world. They got the Zion Williamsons of the world. Kentucky just hasn't really recruited that top end talent lately. Might be turning around. Sky Clark's an example of that. I'm excited to see that. And the last piece of news before the NFL picks, Antonio Brown is back, baby. Oh my gosh, the Terrell Owens of our day. Even worse, to be honest. He's worse than T.O. Just saying. Everybody that hated T.O., T.O. was tame compared to Antonio Bryant. Antonio Brown signs a $2.5 million one-year agreement with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, because Tom Brady just loves him so. And Antonio Brown will act right for one guy, and that's Tom Brady, because of the respect that he has for him. So that is going to be something amazing to follow. He's not going to play today. I think he's going to be available for next week. And my eyes are going to be on Tampa Bay. That is fascinating to me. And honestly, from a football standpoint, phenomenal move by the Buccaneers. Because when you add a talent like that and a move piece like Antonio Brown, and you can move Mike Edwards and Chris Godwin around, now they're a Super Bowl contender. Now they are. So be aware, especially after what they did to Green Bay last week. And speaking of that, let's get to the NFL picks. I went 1-0. I did pick Philly over the Giants, even though it took a very miraculous circumstance for Philadelphia to win. So I'm starting off 1-0. It's bound to get worse from here. Detroit at Atlanta. With Julio Jones back, Atlanta looks a lot better. They're at home. I feel like this is a game Detroit should win, and since that's the case, and I missed on Atlanta last week, this is a makeup call. I'm picking the Atlanta Falcons at home. Cleveland at Cincinnati. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. This is one of those games. I picked Cleveland last week against Pittsburgh, knowing that was a bad idea. Cleveland got absolutely slaughtered. We don't know if Baker Mayfield's healthy. That did not really matter the first time they played because Cleveland just ran all over the Bengals defense. I'm going Cincinnati, and I don't feel great about it. But I'm going to pick the Bengals. Pittsburgh at Tennessee. I heard here's the stat of the morning for you. In their last 16 games together, including the playoffs, Ryan Tannehill has 35 passing touchdowns in 16 games. It's pretty normal. Derrick Henry has 2,068 rushing yards. They're the only teammates in NFL history with 30 passing touchdowns and 2,000 rushing yards in a 16-game span. That's amazing. That is absolutely incredible. And I want to pick Tennessee, but I think they've just – and they're really good. I like Tennessee. I'm taking Pittsburgh because I think that the amount of games that Tennessee has played in such a short time, being without Taylor Lewan against a very physical front, I think that Tennessee can absolutely win, but I'm going to take Pittsburgh in this. But it's a toss-up. Obviously, it's two undefeated teams. And you better watch Red Zone because Cleveland and Bengals are going to be on CBS instead of that game. So if you want to see that, you better either get your Sunday ticket or your Red Zone now. Carolina is at New Orleans. Carolina's been plucky. I don't see them taking it from New Orleans. I thought about making this the lock of the week, but I want to see a little more about out of New Orleans. And by the way, just so you all know, I don't know why wide receivers just so intend to be the way they are. Michael Thomas has missed like all but one game this year. And he, let's just say that reports are coming out that he's not a fan. He's not a locker room favorite. And I thought he was different, but it's really starting to look like that Michael Thomas might not be a Saint forever. He's definitely not a Saint right now, at least personality-wise. So look out for Michael Thomas in that situation. Can't guard Mike. Apparently it's can't stand Mike in the locker room. And that's a report, what I just said. That's not a joke. That's apparently what they call him. Dallas at Washington. I know Dallas looked terrible against the Cardinals. I know Washington with Kyle Allen, they're looking a little better. I want to see Washington figure out their quarterback situation for sure before I pick them again, so I'm going to take Dallas in this game. Green Bay at Houston. This is what I thought I would make my lock of the week. And I'm not saying that I don't believe in my team, in the Packers. But I will say I want to see it before I pick the Packers as a lock again. After what happened in Tampa Bay, Houston needs a win so desperately. I want to see it first. And for fantasy players out there and you forgot to check your lineup, you better do it because Aaron Jones is out today. Or at least the plan is for him not to play. So I'd change that. Last 1 o'clock game, and this is my lock of the week. Buffalo at the New York Jets. Buffalo reeling off of two losses. I don't see them losing three straight. Now, the defense isn't great in Buffalo this year. It's just not. But I don't think that they have to worry about the New York Jets offense starting to really hit on all cylinders against them, especially Josh Allen, the way he's been playing. I think offensively he's going to be able to carry that load. I'm going to take the Buffalo Bills, as my lock of the week. First six were Patriots, 49ers, Buccaneers, Ravens, Cowboys, Chiefs, and now Bills. Tampa Bay at Las Vegas, a lot of COVID concerns. I'm taking the Buccaneers in that game. Kansas City at Denver. Taking the Chiefs. I'll probably take the Chiefs in every game this year. Taking the Chiefs at Denver. San Francisco at New England is going to be a really fun one. For a 425, I think that's going to be a very, very fun game. I hope to catch a lot of that. New England needs a win. San Francisco can be their kryptonite. I'm going to take New England in a nail biter, but that could go either way. I could absolutely see San Francisco winning that game. Jacksonville at the Chargers. Apparently, there's rumblings that Gardner Minshew might be benched in favor of Mike Glennon. So if we didn't think the Jaguars were tanking, we do now. I'm going to take the Chargers. Seattle at Arizona. Arizona looked good last week. I need to see more consistency out of them. I'm taking the Seahawks and the MVP frontrunner, Russell Wilson. Monday night, Chicago at Los Angeles. That's going to be a fun game. That is a game where, if you remember, when Jared Goff had his lowest point of his career was against the Chicago, I believe it was Sunday Night Football against the Bears. It was in the cold, and he threw four interceptions, and everybody just piled on poor Jared Goff. So I'll take the Bears in that one again, even though this time it's in Los Angeles. Colts, Dolphins, Vikings, Ravens, all in a bye week. And my little surprise at the end, I'm going to try my best, my absolute best, to fit this in. And that is the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view for tonight. I'm going to go through my picks real quick. Wish I had more time. Went long today, like always. So here are my picks. Look at this. Only 5 matches on the card, which is shocking. I'm sure we'll get something. Otis versus The Miz in a singles match for the Money in the Bank contract. They can't take it off Otis. I know that they might give it to The Miz, let him parade around with it. He's got a show on USA, and then give it back to Otis. But I don't think that's going to happen. Otis retains his Money in the Bank contract. Jeff Hardy versus Elias. Some people pointed out this would be a good job for Elias to get a win. I do not think so. I'm taking Jeff Hardy in that match. Bayley versus Sasha and a Hell in a Cell match for the WWE SmackDown's Women's Championship. I don't know why, but they love Bayley, and I'm going to say that Bayley wins that one. Drew McIntyre versus Randy Orton. Something interesting is going to happen out of this. I don't know if it's The Fiend. I don't know what it is, but I can't see this match going clean. I can't see him taking the title off of Drew, but I can't see them letting Randy eat yet another pin. I think that Drew McIntyre wins and leaves with the title, but something weird's going to happen in that. And then Roman Reigns versus Jey Uso. If Jey loses, he and his brother Jimmy Uso will have to take orders and acknowledge Roman Reigns, or they're going to be out of the family. Roman Reigns wins. Jey and Jimmy join Roman, and we get the Bloodline, baby. So excited for that. So glad to have you all with me this morning. Very happy about that. I want to thank you all for listening, and tune in next week for the next edition of the Angelo Carriero Show here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM, streaming live all around the world, WLSG.com. Be safe and enjoy your day.